Hi, and welcome to another Canny Conversations podcast, powered by the Pathway Group. My name's Mark Wakeley, and I'm one of the team who bring you these podcasts each week. In this series, Safraz Ali will be talking to some of the business people he's met and worked with in his 23 years at the heart of the West Midlands business community, as well as many of the businesses that are part of the Multicultural Apprenticeship Alliance. In this brand new episode of Canny Conversations, we have the second half of Safraz Ali's conversation with Sue Thexton, the Managing Director and EVP of OneFile, one of the technology leaders within the education sector. The discussion continues this week, looking at various facets of technology careers, industry challenges, and the broad spectrum of roles within technology companies. They will also be looking at the significance of diversity support and the value of partnerships within the industry. They touch on the challenges faced by training providers, the need for industry improvements, as well as growth strategies for OneFile, such as organic growth and potential acquisitions. Saf and Sue also talk about the challenges faced by independent training providers and colleges, emphasising the need for industry support and collaboration to address the financial difficulties and improve completion rates. These are just some of the topics covered, so let's rejoin Saf and Sue.
So, yeah, absolutely. So Sue, in terms of the OneFile journey and the sort of the next steps and the growth phase and so forth, you mentioned the fact that you acquired a company tracker and they brought something to the table that you never had. So the ILR aspect of it. So is OneFile also looking for growth in terms of acquisition growth? Because you've had organic growth, you know, Susanna has put her heart and soul into it. It's all been done organically. You've not really had outside investors. Again, when she was looking at outside investors in terms of private equity, that wasn't something that fitted well within her ethics and what she believed in terms of her values. Now you're sort of on the acquisition, or not necessarily on the acquisition trail, but you've acquired an organization. What are you open to those opportunities? Is that something that's deliberate? Is it opportunistic? What, you know, how does that fit in? And how does that add value to the OneFile brand?
Yes, well, certainly in terms of identifying technology opportunities outside of the current technologies that we have, there are only two ways of doing that, really. One is to build it, and the other is to buy it. And if there is an appropriate technology out there where perhaps in a similar way to Susanna, there are founders that want to perhaps exit or they want to have investment, then yes, of course, we're always open to that. That is definitely something that I'll always be on the lookout for. In addition to that, Harris, the parent company, are always on the lookout for companies that could be potentially part of the Harris family. And so if there's a symbiosis with another company that would link into OneFile, either as a standalone separate company, but would then have some similarities, that would be great, or as a complementary technology that would actually fit within the whole. I don't know what the statistic is, but it's some huge percentage of acquisitions don't succeed, usually because the companies acquiring them are trying to squeeze them in somehow to a round hole when they may be a square peg. Yeah. Whereas actually, if you're allowed to continue to be your square peg on your own, but with the benefit of a sort of support infrastructure behind you, then you've got a much greater sense of success. So I think organic growth is still something that we're really, really focused on. But if there is acquisition potential, then yes, there's an appetite for it. And I think, again, there's a very, very strong integration team that supports an acquisition, meaning that the people, the technology, the landscape of the company that's being acquired is maintained. I'm also looking at geographic expansion. Okay. Because, and don't worry, there is a common theme that everyone says, oh, we've been successful in the UK, now let's go after North America. And you can waste millions of pounds going after North America. Just because we speak the same language, it does not mean it's a very, very different landscape, economically, educationally, government funding, everything. And I have lots of experience of doing that. However, there are opportunities in certain geographies around the world, and we're busy exploring what those are at the moment. And that might mean acquisition of a company where they already have a very strong footprint in that particular market, or it might be adaptation of the software that we currently have to facilitate that market opportunity, or we might decide not to. But it's something that I think we should explore sensibly. One of the first things I said to Susanna was that I'm not interested in going after the bright, shiny things over there. I think we need to consolidate what we've got so we have a strong base, and then we can start to look at further expansion opportunities. And I think we're at that stage now. We've built the core. It's strong. It's stable. It's something that we're rightly proud of. Now what's next? So I think we have the engagement opportunity that I think really exists out there, and that's in-house built technology. But we also have the potential for geographic expansion, and we also have the opportunity for functional expansion through acquisition. So I think that gives us a lot to focus on over the next 5 years.
So if you were to sort of simplify, again, I'll use the word simplify, the growth that you've had, you know, in terms of doubling revenue, the profitability from an organization that was break even to now being, you know, profitable, the skill sets in the meantime, you know, you've looked at again opportunities now to look at acquisitions. You've, you know, acquired a brand as well. How would you, you know, sort of in a nutshell describe how that has happened? What are the sort of key ingredients to pinpoint that growth?
I don't think I can pinpoint it to one thing, because actually it's a number of things add up to a much bigger whole. And actually that kind of harks back to the time when I rebuilt Macromedia, because actually it wasn't one thing that got us to the next growth. It was about 6 or 7 different things that each one made a difference. And that's kind of what we've been doing at OneFile. It's about ensuring that we have the right processes in place, that we have the right support infrastructure, that we have the right infrastructure, because, you know, the data, the information, the dependency that our customers have on the software, it's imperative that there's no downtime. So we have to make sure that the infrastructure is secure and stable and doesn't go down. And our uptime is fantastic. We have all of the certifications required for data integrity and data security. And those are often seen as boring things because it's kind of behind the scenes. But without it, there's a vulnerability there. There is a dependency that customers are not comfortable with. So it's really important to us for that. It's also making sure that our contracts are accurate and our renewals are done on a timely basis every year and on time. I think we've also got a very strong customer ethos. So it's about setting up things like the customer advisory board, reinstating the customer conference that we had for the first time last year, having special interest groups so that the relationships become much stronger and aren't just technology provider and a customer. It's much more about trying to make sure that the industry and our customers are successful. And have we got there yet? No, it's a journey. There's always room for improvement. But I think by doing a number of those things, we've seen the benefits. And, you know, particularly for acquiring new customers, which, you know, it's a very competitive landscape out there. But our commercial people, our salespeople are genuinely some of the nicest people you could meet, who will never sell anything to somebody that doesn't feel right, where the customer genuinely wouldn't benefit from it. I'm a great believer in hiring people with integrity. And that goes through from the way in which we present the software, the way in which we talk about it, the way in which we price it. It's about making sure that we're doing the right thing.
So the consistency, the reliability, the integrity of the actual software, you've got your customer service in terms of, you know, the whole customer experience, the customer service part of it. There's a real stakeholder building relationship aspect of it, getting involved, so not just being the supplier, customer supplier.
Become that trusted advisor that people aspire to, but it's often very, you can't just click your fingers and it happens. That takes time to build those relationships.
Having the right people in the team, people with integrity, yes. doing the right things. And then you've got your whole sort of systems and processes throughout in terms of, you know, whether it's the accounts departments or whether it's different departments, have all got their own sort of structured processes and so forth. So together, alongside obviously the product development, which is continuous, the innovation and so forth, because that's like continuous, isn't it? That's a lifelong.
It is, because it were a SaaS software company. The whole premise of that is that you have a sort of a monthly or a bi-weekly kind of development cycle and sprints, so that you're adding new functionality, new tweaks to the software every couple of weeks, keeping up with government requirements, but also customer landscape needs and desires. Yeah, it's that. It's very complex to do.
It is. But I would also suggest that your brand is very strong as well in terms of the marketing, the branding. You put a lot of effort in terms of you show up to events, conferences. You participate with the activities that the sector is going through. So, you know, whether it's actually exhibiting or whether it's just turning up and being there supporting. So the brand is there. It's, you know, your presence is there. You show up. A lot of the time it's about consistency of showing up. So, you know, the team has done that. You've done that.
The team are amazing. And, you know, one of the reasons that we've been successful from a profitability perspective is that essentially when Susanna sold the business, we were at 70 people. We're now at 68 people and we've doubled the revenue. So it's about actually having huge efficiencies and strength of activities and energy and drive from everybody in the business. You know, they are what makes OneFile. They are the people that make the software. They're the people that develop the software, test the software, market the software, sell the software, support the software. If it wasn't for them, there wouldn't be the business. And I think, you know, a huge amount of that goes back to Susanna's original concept. And we try to maintain that sense of family, that sense of collective responsibility, but then combine that with Harris's view of operational excellence. Every day, every single one of us tries to be a little bit better than we were yesterday. And tomorrow we'll try and be a little bit better than we were today. And I think that's a philosophy, if you like, that approaches every part of the business that we do.
On a personal level, I've gone obviously through your LinkedIn, and I've gone through some of the history that you've been involved with, and I see a little bit of another thread that goes throughout your sort of career journey, which is the fact that you do a lot of other extracurricular sort of activities, if I can call it that. You know, you're volunteering a lot, you're getting involved with many other organisations, whether it's volunteering for the London Olympics by the time, or becoming some sort of ambassador or a support mechanism, visiting professor, or all of these sort of other things. I mean, there's a long list of about 12 things that I've seen, and I think it's just magnificent in terms of the range of diversity of your volunteering and your input into many different organizations. So talk to us a little bit about that in your sort of career journey and the benefit that you get as well as a person, and the need and the desire to do that.
You know, I never set out to do any of those things, but one of my philosophies in life is to say yes to things when opportunities present themselves. And some people could say, well, that's a negative, because actually you end up not doing any of them very well because you're trying to spread yourself too thin. But I also think that if you say yes to things, it opens up relationships, partnerships, opportunities, and intellectual learnings that you wouldn't get if you didn't kind of expose yourself to some of those things. And they've been great. All the things that I've done, I've really enjoyed doing, and supporting organizations in whatever way. It does mean sometimes saying, no, I can't do that particular thing because I've got too many things on that week and managing my time, because it's also really important that it doesn't distract from my day job, if you like. But, you know, I've spent a lot of time with BAFTA, for instance, the Film and Television Association, which came around through my work at Macromedia, where we were at the forefront of the multimedia or interactive entertainment business. And that's been a huge privilege and huge opportunity for me to learn a lot and meet a lot of very different people. And that's led on to other things like the visiting professorship at Middlesex University, where one of the jury members, if you like, for the BAFTA Interactive Entertainment Awards was a lecturer at Middlesex and invited me to come along. And so I said yes and open up another opportunity. The Olympics was the same sort of thing. I absolutely love London, despite working in Manchester, because I come from Newcastle originally. I still feel like London, I'm on holiday, because if I'm walking around Piccadilly Circus or the Palace, Buckingham Palace or Westminster, it's like, wow, this is so cool to be around all of these things that tourists are coming in from all over the world to see. So to share that love and passion during the Olympics was a fantastic opportunity. And in fact, on my very first day, I was asked if I wouldn't mind accompanying the organizer at the time to a press conference, because they were halfway through the Olympics and they wanted to sort of comment on it. And I was taken to this press conference with Boris Johnson and Sebastian Coe. And only because at some point during their talk about how it was all going, they wanted to point to a London ambassador. And they sort of made the point of saying, and look, we have one here in her uniform. And that was me. So it was just one of those random things. I hadn't actually volunteered at that point. It was just my very first day. But it was great to be able to share my passion for London with tourists from all over the world. But on a serious note, also the non-exec director position that I've had with a company called Capture, who are an amazing company run by a very inspiring woman called Abby Enoch, again, has enabled me to sort of help a smaller organization to be able to look at efficiencies, look at opportunities, and to sort of guide them on a commercial basis that, seems to work for both of us.
I want to go back to what you said earlier on again, and also something that you picked up at the OneFile customer user conference last year. You spoke about some of the pressing challenges that that are being faced by the independent training providers, the colleges, your customers. The landscape has changed. You know, you've got the cost of living crisis. You've also got challenges in terms of talent, challenges in terms of retaining the learners, retaining their staff. And there's a raft of sort of these challenges. What's your sort of views in terms of some of the obstacles, the pain that, you know, the colleges are facing possibly, and also the independent training providers, and how do you see that, not necessarily as the MD of OneFile, but, you know, how do you pick that up, and what advice or encouragement would you give to anybody in our sector who might be feeling a little bit gloomy or... Yeah.
There is quite a lot of gloom around. Yeah. I mean, it is a tough landscape out there. I won't lie. We've seen, as you referenced before, some big customers last year went out of business.
Yeah.
That is dreadful for the industry. No one wants to see that. Yeah. I think the economic landscape that every customer is living within is very difficult because it's a government-funded industry. If that funding does not increase, and yet the costs associated with the provision of that training increase, it's not sustainable in the long term. There've been many training providers who've decided that apprenticeships are not for them for that very reason, and they'll continue to do privately funded training, but not any of their government-funded training. And that's very, very sad, because it's actually spoiling the very unique opportunity that the government has for the next generation of employees. It's letting young people, not just young people, but letting people down who would otherwise have a much stronger career opportunity than they would otherwise. So we are very conscious of that. We would encourage any training provider that's a customer of ours to talk to us if they're going through financial difficulties, because if there's any way we could support them and help them get through that difficult time, then I'd much rather do that than have them disappear altogether as a business. So I think we empathize, we understand, we appreciate that. And so anything that we can do to help that situation we will take. I do think, however, that if as an organization, if as an industry, we can improve the completion rates, that will help. I think, as I said earlier on in our conversation, that will help the training provider because they'll obviously have the funding for those students that then go on to complete that otherwise might have left. But it will also help their relationship with the employers. And I think it will help the employers because they will then have a student who has completed that apprenticeship and they will then get the benefits of that. So I think that for us is one of the key elements to the ongoing financial and economic success of this. And that financial benefit then has greater impact for the industry so that we have the workforce for the future that is better equipped and better able to then be successful in their chosen career.
So as you rightly said, I mean, there's organizations who made a decision to leave this the funded landscape because, again, of compliance and some of the obstacles and the loops that you've got to go through being a funded training provider. Obviously, we all understand that being responsible for public funds and public sector funds. There's also been challenges in terms of the retention of learners, the retention of staff, and all of these things on alongside everything else. And then what we also find is that the rates that we're being paid for the apprenticeships has not really risen in line with general cost of living and various other aspects of it. And we can't suddenly raise our prices because, you know, we don't really determine that. So you're having to do more with less to a certain level. There's more expectations, there's more competition, there's more people after your customers and trying to differentiate as well. And when you get to a certain scale or certain size, particularly, you know, you have a sort of infrastructure cost. So, you know, so it gets to a point where some of the larger organizations, some of the sort of known names within our sector find it more difficult as opposed to sometimes a newer organization who's maybe a sort of director-led, smaller team. They've got slightly less costs and so forth. So where usually where the economies of scale work, because our cost base is sort of fixed to a certain level, it's a fair cost base, you've got to do a certain amount, it becomes a bit harder. Same with colleges, the same with independent training providers of a certain size. So you're in that continuous sort of catch-22 situation. You grow and then you find yourself, you know, I've got to have additional people to cover certain roles now. I've got to need a person for this and I need a person for this and so forth, identified roles, and it becomes a bit more difficult as well. Any words of advice, encouragement that you could give to industry leaders, managing directors, CEOs, leaders of independent training providers, principals of colleges, you know, how can you deal with some of these challenges? And I'm not sure if there is one thing, but any words of encouragement from your experience?
Yeah, I don't think it's easy to say one thing that would benefit everybody, but I actually think that we may see more consolidation in the market where organizations individually are struggling. And this could be a college, this could be a private training provider. But actually, if you were to combine the infrastructure, it then gives you a better opportunity to potentially operate in a more cost-effective way. We're starting to see some of that. I also think that, you know, the organizations you were talking about, the smaller organizations who are particularly starting out, I actually think that they're entering the market, potentially diluting the market, and not necessarily understanding what's required. And they then exit quite quickly from an industry that I think they thought, oh, there's an opportunity there, let's go after that. You know, it can work both ways. You can have a small company that sees an opportunity, does it really well, and then starts to expand.
Yeah.
And essentially they are acting in competition to more well-established training providers. But you've also got those organizations who see an opportunity, go after it without really understanding all of the reporting opportunities that are challenges that are there, and really struggle with it.
Yeah.
And either will get out after the first year or will sell or merge with another organization down the line. But I do think that if there's an opportunity for the cost base for one or more training providers to be merged, then you have the potential for making the joined organizations more profitable. If you're all doing the same thing, then there's an opportunity, I think, for more consolidation. And I think we are starting to see more of that.
So I want to try and bring our conversation to a little bit of a close. I mean, there's so many things that we have discussed, and one of the things that I had on my list that I haven't been able to ask you is regarding the Queen's Award for sort of customer service and customer excellence and innovation as well. So, I think that's a massive achievement for an organisation to be recognised by royalty. I mean, whether it's probably the King's Award
it now.
Award now in terms of innovation and sort of enterprise and so forth. So talk to us a little bit about the journey of an organisation being recognised by awarding bodies and accolades and so forth. And is that something that does add value and in terms of differentiation, recognition, and getting the team to sort of go and achieve these sort of what may be perceived as high, possibly impossible for some organizations to sort of even consider, but I'm sure they're within their realms to sort of go out and achieve these things.
I think they're an amazing opportunity to promote your organization. And you talked before about how OneFile does show up and attend and support industry kind of events and activities. And this is another kind of way in which it's about celebrating the technology that the team have developed. It's recognizing the strength and the excellence, if you like, of that. And yes, it's hard work actually to complete the entry form in order to apply for them. But anyone can do it. You know, it doesn't have to be a particular kind of organization. And, you know, I'll be honest, all of the journey for this really started before I joined. Certainly the first award was, I wasn't anywhere near, but the second award that we won, I was very much part of that, but not actually the decision to enter for it in the first place, which was definitely Susanna's.
Yeah.
And it's very, very well deserved. And, you know, she should take and did take the credit for that, which is wonderful. But will we be applying for future King's Awards? Yes, we will, because the technology should be recognized. I think that the work that the team have done in developing the software, and you have to be able to demonstrate that the software has sold and been used successfully. I think we are absolutely going to be applying in the future. And I would really recommend that anybody who's thinking about it should do so. And if they want to talk to either myself or Susanna, then we'd be very happy to talk about it.
So again, you know, you mentioned Susanna's name throughout our conversation, and it would be remiss of us not to talk about Susanna, because it is her legacy, it is her organization, and she's still an ambassador within that. So talk to us a little bit about how that relationship has sort of evolved and define that for us a little bit in terms of your relationship with the founder and co-founder of OneFile.
It was really important to me personally, but also to all of the staff, that there was a continuity of relationship with Susanna. Her decision to sell the company and to realize the rewards for all of the hard work that she and Chris did in order to build the company to what it was. It was super important to me that we didn't lose that we didn't lose Susanna. And I know from other friends and colleagues who have sold their businesses in the past, that wrench from being the founder to being the parent to the baby, if you like, it's a really difficult wrench when you sell your business. And why shouldn't we both benefit from an ongoing relationship? And so Susanna is a formal ambassador for us. She works with us 4 days a month, and I want that to continue for as long as she wants it to continue for. Because from a staff perspective, it shows that, you know, her legacy, everything that she built, hasn't just disappeared. And I would never want that to happen at all. But it demonstrably, she's still there, still associated with us. And I think it works for both of us. She is part of everything that we do, and we're part of her ongoing journey. She still does webinars for us and speaks at conferences for us, which I think she would probably do anyway. But, you know, I like to have the fact that there's a more formal relationship still there that recognizes the legacy that she created in the first place.
So in terms of future gazing for the organization, you've had tremendous success in terms of, we mentioned profitability, we mentioned turnover, obviously the size of the organization, and you've done that without additional sort of necessary additional people. So a little bit more lean, agile, responsive. Again, you know, with the product development changes, you've done, you know, you've got the acquisition, your product is changing continuously, you're open to opportunities in terms of acquisition. You've also looked at your team, if there are better opportunities within the Harris Group in terms of other sister organizations, then people have the opportunity to do that. What does the future look like in terms of the organization? And if I can, also a little bit about yourself as well, in terms of, you know, your own future sort of career planning and so forth. And, you know, you mentioned earlier on, part of it is about your good self, seeing opportunities, being adaptable and so forth. What does that look like if I was to put you a little bit on the spot, if I may?
Well, actually, as it happens, my career path is already kind of in play.
All right.
Because I've been asked by Harris to manage a portfolio of companies.
Okay.
And one of which is OneFile, so I'm not disappearing.
Okay.
But focusing on sort of public sector organization companies in the UK, which is, again, is a wonderful opportunity for someone of my maturity, shall we say, to be given a growth opportunity. But it's recognition of the work that you know, we've done at OneFile. Therefore, finding my successor is my number one priority at the moment. Maybe by the time that this podcast goes out, we will already have found that person. But it's really important to me, but also to Susanna as well, to make sure that we have someone that is able to bring the now teenager of a business forward into being a full adult. And so that's the next step, if you like. It's got to be someone that understands figures, that is comfortable managing a technology company, but cares deeply about people and the sector. Okay. Because none of it matters. So that's what I'm looking at the moment.
Okay. So we can't let that lie as it is. We've got to explore that a little bit more. So there's a transition taking place in terms of your role as the MD, so to a bigger, wider role within Harris Computers, Harris Corporation. I use that name interchangeably. So they're looking at sort of more opportunities within the public funded landscape.
Yes.
And you're going to be leading on that sort of vertical in terms of what that brings to the table. So what's the vision for that then, in terms of Harris Computers working within that sort of arena?
I think I referenced before everything that I learned in the first year of being with Harris, all the lessons I learned that I just hadn't really thought about before. And it's about helping other organizations realize their potential, and to do so not in a direct hands-on way, but to encourage the MDs to help them be as successful as they can be with their businesses, because each one will have its own industry challenges, its own set of needs and requirements. But if I can use any of the lessons that I've learned to help them do that, then that will benefit those businesses and those MDs. Because being an MD is quite a lonely job sometimes.
It's a tough job, yeah.
Because, you know, you can't really confide your concerns or worries with your team. Equally, you can't do that with your customers, and you don't necessarily have someone above you that you can talk to. So to facilitate that kind of landscape where the managing directors can share experiences and ideas and concerns and challenges, I think is a really powerful benefit, and one that I'm hoping to be able to kind of expand upon.
Oh, obviously, I want to wish you all the best in terms of your journey, in terms of the next phase of your career with Harris Computers. You're still, still part of, obviously, OneFile and the whole OneFile family and so forth. So you're still overseeing that. And I wish you all the best in terms of the person who's going to step into your shoes, which are big shoes in their own right, with all the experience that you bring to the table and so forth. And I would like for yourself to have the sort of the last word in terms of, obviously, some last words to share with our audience in terms of the sector that we're in, the technology. You know, you as a woman in tech and the experiences that you've had, you know, you've got a young daughter, 24, 25, I think. So what sort of advice would you give to a person entering into the field of technology in the field of it that everybody now talks about, you know, it's part of our life and so forth. So from that perspective as well, any words of encouragement, any words of wisdom, just any opportunity that you wish to share with us. And I would like you to have some few
just
words.
About 15
a few words,
in there.
A few words of encouragement. Yeah, there's a lot of things there, but you can pick up whichever you feel and so forth.
Yes.
And I just want to thank you also for your time, for your support, of Multicultural Apprenticeship Alliance. We're a customer as well as Pathway Group of OneFile. You know, we're a big ambassador, a big supporter of the organization as well. And we've got a multifaceted relationship in that respect as well. So I want to thank you for that as well. And I thank you as a customer. And I thank you also as being our customer as well of Multicultural Apprenticeship Alliance. And also for your time today and taking the journey, the drive from London and sharing your wisdom and your thoughts and also sharing your
experience. Absolute pleasure, Asaf. Yeah. It really is. And I don't often get a chance to talk like this because normally I'm busy doing things, you know, associated with the job, busy. And actually taking the time to reflect is very rewarding, actually, because it makes you think about things that perhaps you wouldn't ordinarily. So it's been a pleasure to be asked to do this. You asked for some sort of summary of points, which is always quite difficult to kind of summarize it, despite what you were saying before about my ability to get through to the nugget that's beneath everything. One of the things that I think is really important is when people talk about the technology sector, people usually assume that that means developers, coders. If you're going into tech, that's what it means. But actually, technology it's just a company. And it has a lot of developers in it developing the technology. But a company is a sum of lots and lots of individual components. And therefore, to have a career in technology spans the full gamut of functions, support, customer-facing roles. Yes, technology development, but it's about thinking creatively. It's about customer relationships. It's about marketing. It's about sales. It's about support. It's infrastructure. It's so many different things that whatever your background, whatever your experience, there may well be a good role or opportunity within a technology business for you to build a career, particularly if you are a woman, particularly if you are from an underrepresented part of society. I think there's a willingness and an openness towards diversity and support that isn't always there in some other sectors. And you're right, technology has traditionally been a very male-centered world, but one that I think is much more accepting now than it ever was. And we're on a good path. So if you are a younger person not sure what to do, seriously think about technology companies as a career opportunity for you. I think you'll find a lot of them are very open to having a diverse conversation, having a balanced conversation, and an openness to different forms of learning, i.e. apprenticeships. And, you know, you talked about the Multicultural Apprenticeship Alliance, of which we are a big supporter. And, you know, I was interviewed a few months back following a Multicultural Alliance meeting, and I said it was very much about partnerships. And I do see that one of the ways in which the industry can benefit is through partnerships. It's about turning up at industry sector events, but it's more than that. It's about using that opportunity to then work together on things, to actually go in collectively and talk to other organisations about this. So I think that's a summary, if you like, for my view on life and careers is develop partnerships, because partnerships make sense for both parties, for all parties, and you get more benefit together than you would if you were both approached the same thing from individual perspectives, if that makes sense.
So we've been honored to host you today. It's been a slightly different conversation to what I sometimes have, because there's just so much there, and there's so much diversity in the conversation. Usually I'm sometimes speaking to employers or learning providers, and they have that perspective in terms of their organization, early careers. This has been a slightly broader conversation. Mm. It's obviously been about your journey, your experiences. You know, you're very unique in terms of obviously, you know, who you are, what you bring to the table, and also as well in terms of the fact that, you know, you've got the legacy of the brand of OneFile under your sort of remit, and now the next phase of the journey that you're having. So thank you so much for sharing those thoughts and show experiences, and I wish you all the best in terms of the next phase in your journey, and thank you for your time today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to Sue Thexton, Managing Director and EVP of OneFile, for her time and insight. Next week, Safraz will be in conversation with Charlotte Bosworth, Chief Executive of Innovate Awarding. So if you don't want to miss that, then remember to subscribe or follow us. If you're new to the podcast, let me tell you there are already 87 other Canny Conversations podcast episodes out there. And you can listen to all those past episodes by searching for Canny Conversations on your preferred podcast platform. Or go to 1386audio.com/have-a-listen. We'd also love it if you could review, subscribe, or follow the podcast. And please tell your friends and colleagues about us. If you'd like to know more, then go to cannyconversationspodcast.co.uk or go to Safraz's website. That's safraz.co.uk. Safraz has also written a series of easy-to-follow business books, Canny Bites. And these are available from cannybites.co.uk/buy-the-book. As I said, we'll be back next week, where Safraz will be in conversation with Charlotte Bosworth, Chief Executive of Innovate Awarding. So until then, we hope you have a good week.
This is a 1386 audio production.